Do you remember how the Bible begins? In the opening chapters of Genesis, we get two creation stories. Now, the reality is that in the church, we often don't tend to think of them as two separate stories, but there are details from each that we can easily recall. Most people who know the creation stories of the Judeo-Christian tradition are aware of the rhythm of God speaking things into existence. God said, "Let there be light," and you remember what happened, right? There was light, exactly. And we are generally also familiar with the idea of a second human being being formed from the rib of the first. But it's that idea of speaking things into existence that I want to spend a moment with before we get to today's text. In the first creation story, Scripture begins with the power of the Word. And we could spend time talking about this in many ways. After all, if we are honest, we don't have to talk about God speaking things into existence to know that words have power, that the old adage, "sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me," has never been true. Right? It is simply either a statement of denial or a statement of hope. Words are powerful things, and Scripture confirms this in many ways, just as our own lives do. In fact, there are many practices of posting positive words or repeating meaningful phrases that are designed to help our physical, mental, and emotional health. Simply put, words matter. I suspect it is no accident that Scripture begins with the power of words. So let us not then miss the fact that when John, the gospel writer, opens his gospel, he also does it with the Word. In the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and without him, not one thing came into being. Now, all too often in our Christian tradition, the conversation has stalled there. It has become, from those verses and some that follow it, a conversation about the Trinity. An idea with foundations in the New Testament, but that was really a doctrine developed in the first centuries of the early church, or it has become a conversation about proving Jesus' divinity beyond a shadow of a doubt. All too often, those opening verses of John have been used to make a case to claim that Jesus was part of the us to which the divine refers in the creation story. And all too often, this focus has been the only conversation we have had, which has caused us to miss what comes a few verses later when John writes, "And the Word became flesh and lived among us." Or as Eugene Peterson writes in his translation, The Message, "The Word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood." Friends, while at some level we might like this image of the Word becoming flesh, the reality is that it is a lot to deal with, and often it is more than we want to deal with. Maybe that's why our most frequent Christian conversations around John 1 have to do with either the Trinity or Jesus' divinity. Because the idea of God being real here in the midst of our wonderful, messy lives may just be too much for us. Scripture begins with God speaking things into existence. The Word creates. We are in many ways more comfortable with that. While we like the idea of a Jesus who welcomes the little children, who pats us on the back and tells us we're okay, there are many ways in which we are more comfortable with an all-powerful God who sits at a distance. A God upon whom we can comfortably blame things and to whom we can cry out when we are in need. But what does it mean for the Word to become flesh? What does it mean for someone to show us God in the most intimate spaces of our lives? What does it mean for the presence of the divine to show up in flesh and blood and move in to the house next door? See, in many ways, what John tells us is the location of the Word has changed. The Word is no longer just something that is spoken out into the ether. And remember, that's powerful. But the Word is now a lived reality that exists in flesh. Just in case we forgot to listen to what is floating around in the clouds around us, now the Word, the divine, the presence of God is presenting in a new way with flesh and bones, with feelings and faults, with a lived experience in the midst of the same time and place in which other people are living. And friends, if we're willing to sit with that concept, it is a powerful one, because when the Word becomes flesh, when the divine enters the daily lives of human beings, not only does it mean that God cares about us, but it means that the human experience matters. We make a mistake if we locate our faith only in heaven. If our faith is only about saying the right words or being baptized at the right time or in the right way, believing the right things to simply ensure a place in heaven, then we miss out on a central message of Jesus's life, that this world matters, that the human experience matters, that people matter, that creation matters. Regardless of whether you understand Jesus as God, as having been made of different stuff, part of God in a way that no other human being has ever or will ever be, or whether you understand Jesus as human, just like us, but a human who lived as the most open channel to God, the one who, in a way available to us if we're willing, shone God's light and love and made God available to all people? Or even if you understand Jesus simply as an amazing person, perhaps a prophet, who did and said things that made him a worthy companion, regardless of where you come down on Jesus' identity, on his humanity or divinity, it matters that we, as Christians, follow one who lived among us, one who had the full human experience. And if we really embrace this, then it will change who we are. Because look at the life of Jesus. He didn't go around proclaiming his divinity and asking people to bow down to him. Rather, he pointed people toward a loving God whose embrace was big enough to include them no matter what. Jesus didn't sit on a shiny throne, only interacting with those who were clean and worthy and declared deserving. Rather, he lived and moved and had his being in the midst of the messy, dirty, broken chapters of real people's lives. Jesus looked in the eyes of those considered the other. He touched those who were called untouchable. He forgave those who were cut off because of sin. And most simply, Jesus did this in the midst of the real routines of eating and sleeping, of the joys and sorrows of being in relationship with other humans, of the difficulty of choosing that which was right when it meant risk. See, that's the person whose birth we celebrated at Christmas. That's the baby to whose improvised cradle the dirty, tired shepherds went. That's the toddler, likely in the midst of his terrible twos, to whom the Magi from afar brought gifts and of whom the king feared. This Jesus, upon whom 2,000 years of Christian history has focused, has shown us God more clearly. Yes, but let us never forget that he did it in the midst of the rhythms of daily life. So if we are his followers, how will we live in the flesh? How will we reflect God in our choices? How will God be seen not only in our words and our claims, but in how we interact with others, how we use the resources to which we have access, how we leave or don't leave a bigger mess in this world? This is the responsibility we have as Christians, to live our lives in ways that make God's love more visible, to live our lives in ways that better our community, to live our lives in ways that care for God's creation, to live our lives in ways that remind people that all of our choices in this human life matter, not only for us, but for all people. Today is the last Sunday in the Christmas season. Tomorrow is Epiphany, the day when not only is the coming of the Magi remembered, but when God being made manifest, being made clear, being made available to all the world is celebrated. What better time than now for us to ask hard questions and to make new commitments to living in ways that make clear God's love for all the world? What better time than now to embrace our living in the flesh, in this community, in this beautiful and broken world, and to choose each day to live in ways that reflect God's light and God's love? May it be so.